everybody. Welcome to another episode of What You Think Doesn't Matter. Thank you for joining me this week as we talk about the Branch Davidian and Waco raid that happened back in February of 1993. A lot of conspiracy theory behind that, and I'm going to try and break it down, and we'll try to get to the bottom of what the so-called conspiracy theory is and try and answer some of the questions that have been raised about that. Questions such as, was the search warrant legitimate? What were the ATF looking for when they showed up? Why were there multiple law enforcement agencies involved? And the biggest question of all is who shot first and who started the fire? Hopefully we'll be able to answer those questions and give everybody a better understanding of what was going on. There was a lot of finger pointing going on in this case, each one blaming the other for the outcome. Some wrongful death lawsuits that were filed, some criminal prosecutions that were made and some convictions that were made. And this case was also linked to some future cases that would happen. So sit tight, and when we come back, we'll get started. In a society that doesn't care about what you think, but only what you can prove, here comes a show that puts doubt into everything you think you know about the criminal justice system and the Constitution. No, he's not a lawyer, and no, he's not a counselor. He is only armed with his plethora of knowledge, training, and experience in the criminal justice system. So grab your coffee, have a seat, and hang on tight. Here's the host of What You Think Doesn't Matter, Chris Thorne. Welcome back. The Branch Davidians, one of several groups that continued to spread the work of the Seventh-day Adventist and settled in Waco back in 1935. Well, over the years, it was a bunch of infighting and power struggle, and several offshoot groups began to break off from the main group. And in the process, a young man by the name of Vernon Howell basically became the leader of the group in 1986, and he became the head of the Mount Carmel community that is there in Waco. One of the first things that Howell did was change his name to David Koresh. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, the name suggested that he was a spiritual heir of the biblical King David, and that he was a messianic figure, though not the Messiah Jesus. So Koresh exercised his new authority also by taking several spiritual wives, as he called them, from among the group's unmarried women, and basically convinced his group that his intention was to create a new lineage of children who he believed would eventually rule the world. And while all the allegations of child abuse and sexual assault was going on, David Koresh's idea or belief that the end of times was near, because he was so hell-bent in believing on the seven deadly sins and breaking the seven seals, he started amassing an arsenal of automatic weapons, explosives, ammunition, explosive devices, and so on and so forth, because he wanted to be ready for the ensuing battle that he believed was going to be happening soon. So with that being said, this kind of addressed the investigation that the FBI and the ATF conducted. And I'm going to give you some of the highlights that I found in the affidavit that was submitted with this request for a search warrant. And I tell you, it is very, very extensive and is very detailed. And based on that information alone, the ATF and the FBI had every reason in the world to show up there to execute this warrant. We'll get into the actual execution of the warrant in a little bit, because I have various opinions on that. But let's go ahead and take a look at the affidavit for the warrant. Okay. So basically, going back to May of 1992, it kind of started out when somebody who worked for the United Parcel Service, UPS, reported that several deliveries had been made to a place called the Mad Bag, which is supposedly a gun seller or gun shop. And out of those deliveries, there were several deliveries that shipped components and explosives. And here's kind of the suspicious part about that. They were all shipped as COD, or cash on delivery. But when the delivery person would stop, he would be held up at the store, the mag bag with the delivery. He was told to wait while somebody in the store went and made a phone call and spoke to somebody at the other end of the phone call, and then told the delivery person to drive out to the Mount Carmel site, and somebody would meet him there to pick up the delivery and to give him the money, or to give the driver the money. Further, the delivery person said that when he arrived at the compound, he saw several manned observation posts or towers, and he honestly felt that they were armed. There were armed people in those places. So it sounds to me like the entire compound was set up just like that. It was set up like a compound with watchtowers, armed security. Some of the deliveries that were made were cases of inert hand grenades, quantities of black powder. All of that were delivered to the mag bag. UPS also recognized that there were delivery of 90 pounds of powdered aluminum metal and 30 to 40 cardboard tubes. There were also two parcels containing 60 M16 or AR-15 ammunition magazines, all delivered by UPS. And many of you gun nuts know out there that converting an AR-15 into a fully automatic rifle is actually pretty simple if you have the right parts. All you got to do is just put them in there. A lot of times it could be used by templates, milling machines, lathes, and instruction guides. That's all you need. And that actually makes the gun illegal. And there were reports from the neighbors outside the compound who several times, on several occasions, reported hearing machine gun fire coming from within the compound. Another delivery that was made by UPS was about 45 AR-15 M16 upper units, upper receiver units. That's the area where the breech goes. Basically, that's where the barrel is attached and where the bullet is fed into the breech in which it is discharged. There were also, check this out, pineapple-type hand grenades. Obviously, they were inert. You're not going to ship live hand grenades, but you still have to have the knowledge and the materials to put the powder in them to make them live. And this UPS driver said he delivered about 50 of them. Okay, there was also two M16 machine gun kits, M16 E2 kits, which are extraction kits. They contain all the parts of an M16 machine gun, except for the lower receiver unit, which the lower receiver unit of an M16 or an AR-15, which they're essentially the same gun with mild modifications, they're considered a firearm, okay? The lower portion of an M16 or AR-15, the lower receiver, as it's called, is considered the firearm by definition because that's got your trigger housing unit in it. It's got your magazine well on it, and that's what operates the gun functionally. Let's see. They also received 104 AR-15 M16 upper receiver groups with barrels, 8,100 rounds of 9mm and .223 caliber ammunition, 20 100-round capacity magazine drums for AK-47s, 260 magazines, 30 M14 magazines, an M76 grenade launcher, 200 M31 practice rifle grenades, 4 M16 part set kits, 2 flare launchers, approximately 50 inert practice hand grenades, 40 to 50 rounds of black gunpowder, 30 pounds of potassium nitrate, which many of you guys know potassium nitrate is what's used in explosives. You mix it with the gunpowder and it goes kaboom. 5 pounds of magnesium metal powder, pound of igniter cord, which by definition is a Class C explosive, 91 AR-15 lower receiver units, 26 various calibers and brands of handguns and long guns, 90 pounds of aluminum metal powder, and 30 to 40 cardboard tubes. In addition to all of this firepower, he actually had engineers that lived out at the compound who knew how to machine the parts that he needed to convert all of his semi-automatic weapons into fully automatic weapons. And check it out, too. He also had an anti-tank rifle machine gun. Holy crap. What the hell do you need with an anti-tank machine gun? I'm sorry, but this dude was a wacko. He is way the fuck out there. And he was ready for World War III. I shit you not, that's what he was planning on doing. I'm sorry. Nobody, no matter how big of a gun nut you are, nobody needs that kind of armament unless they are planning to do something. Period. And to top it all off, when they went to investigate his so-called licensing, he wasn't registered with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or ATF, to be a licensed federal firearms licensing. The so-called store mag bag was just a front. It wasn't registered as a legitimate business. It also was not registered with the Board of Licensing for firearms distribution or manufacturing. So, and to top it all off too, a lot of the businesses that Koresh was dealing with to get these parts were shady themselves. Those various other companies that were sending him those parts, they were under federal investigation for manufacturing illegal firearms and explosives. So, this dude was flipping out there, man. I mean, good Jesus. There's no need for any of that. At least not unless you're outside the military, but there is no reason in the world for a civilian to have that kind of armament. So the investigation into the firearms and explosives manufacturing and distribution charges and stuff like that, that was just part of the overall investigation. He was also being investigated for sexual assault, abuse, rape. This dude was a monster, bottom line monster. He was not right in the head. And to be honest with you, he's lucky he took himself out, because there's not a single cop out there that would not have probably laid a bullet into him if not given half the chance. But he pussified his way out of it, and he did it himself, and he saved all the agents out there a headache. So good riddance as far as I'm concerned. We don't need people like him in the world, but unfortunately, we have too many of them around. All right, well, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and when we come back, we're going to get into the execution of the search warrant, the raid in which some ATF and FBI officers or agents were killed in the gunfight. We'll talk about what the FBI did right, what they did wrong, where they acknowledged they went right, where they acknowledged they went wrong. And there's a lot of stuff involved in that raid. I have my own opinion as to what I think should have happened or what I think should not have happened. And we'll kind of go over the evidence there, and then let you all decide of good, bad, or indifferent. So sit tight. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Just want to remind everybody that you can follow us on social media at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also follow my webpage at www.podpage.com/WYTDM. And if you'd like to send a message to me, whether it be a suggestion, comment, idea, you can do so at wytdm@yahoo.com. I do try to respond to all emails as quickly as possible. But if you don't hear back right away, please keep checking your inbox. I will get to you as quickly as I can. And if you come up with an idea or suggestion that I like, you may hear it on a future episode of What You Think Doesn't Matter. So please keep the comments coming. All righty, on with the show. All right, welcome back. So now we're going to kind of talk about the standoff, raid, whatever you want to call it. That happened back in February of 1993. Basically, FBI and ATF showed up at the compound with search and arrest warrants. But when they got there, they were kind of met with a shit ton of resistance. According to the confirmed ATF account, agents hadn't even gotten out of their vehicles before the cult members started shooting at them. And they also said that when they were actually able to approach the house, cult members opened the doors on the agents, but then slammed it shut as agents yelled search warrants and federal agents. And they began firing through the compound's main double doors. And testimony and affidavits say that they were being shot at with fully automatic weapons. Some of the gunfire that killed the four federal agents and wounded 16, as they said, quote unquote, clearly came from automatic weapons. And under federal firearms licensing, automatic weapons are illegal weapons. They were manufactured illegally, therefore emphasizing the need for the search warrant and the need to go in and arrest these people. Okay, so now after the initial contact was made, the agents had to fall back and regather once they realized that this was not going to be an easy task. So after that initial contact, a siege took place, or a standoff took place, and it lasted 51 days. During that time frame, the FBI pulled out all the stops. They shut down their power, shut down their water. They lit the compound up with extremely bright lights, so you could actually probably see this place from orbit at night. That's how light, how lit up it was. They put loudspeakers outside the doors playing various types of music, all in an attempt to break them down emotionally, psychologically, and physically to get them to surrender without any resistance. Well, all that failed. And so now here comes a tank. The FBI's got, believe it or not, got an armored tank. They used that, and there's rumor that the tank drove over several vehicles that were owned by Koresh. Now, my thought is this. If those vehicles were purposely set up and staged to act as a barricade to get to the compound, then that tank had every right to go over those vehicles to create a pathway to get there. But if they were just out there, out of the way, and just there for storage, and they used the tank to run over those vehicles just as a show of force to say, hey, look what we got, just to destroy some property, then as far as I'm concerned, that's bullshit. That's unprofessional, and that should never have happened. I mean, that's just bullshit, period. They're saying that when the tank approached, it crushed, they're claiming, the Davidians say that the tank crushed several fuel containers and that a grenade or other projectile had set off the fire. Well, gas grenades are basically like hand grenades, only non-explosive. There's a detonator on it. When it fires, it sets off a spark, therefore at which point releases the gas. Now, if that gas is flammable and that spark hits that gas, then obviously there's going to be a loud explosion and things are going to get burned and shit's going to be destroyed. So, but before the fire started, though, the FBI intercepted conversations coming from some people that they couldn't identify. And it's, then they stated, quote, "I already poured it. It's already poured. Don't pour it all out. We might need some later. So we only light them at first if they come in with that tank," end quote. That is an alleged conversation that took place that was intercepted by the FBI. Now, with that being said, if that's what happened, then the Davidians planned on burning that place down, and they had already planned ahead of time that they weren't going to go out alive and they were not going to go out without a fight. So they have already accepted the fact that they were going to die. They are denying the fact that there was a mass suicide. And that's coming from the people who managed to escape, who said that there was no plans of a mass suicide and that that's bunk and that's false. But then you start looking at semantics and so on and so forth. My thought is this. If they're pouring gasoline all over the place and there's a spark anywhere nearby, as far as I'm concerned, they had to have known what the fallout was going to be. You pour that kind of gas around and you start a fire, you're probably going to die. All right. So, but to support that allegation, FBI snipers said they saw a Davidian start a fire, and that was supported with infrared pictures that were taken from a plane that had detected three fires burning in three separate parts of the house before the tank even busted through the wall. So that kind of takes out the FBI starting the fire with the tank, if that's the case. Because like I said, this is all coming from information that I have not been able to find to refute it or to support it. This is all one side of the information. And as far as I'm concerned, if I'm looking at information from one side and I'm looking for information or evidence to refute that argument and I can't find it, I am going to go with the information I have right in front of me. Although with Janet Reno overseeing the entire thing, that right there was a fuck up, because anybody who knew Janet Reno at the time knew she had her head in her ass. And she couldn't investigate anything if somebody held her hand and walked her through it. But the FBI was real reluctant on giving up information and details and stuff like that, like they are. Good luck getting information from the government. They don't like to give it up. But after reading all this stuff and reading this case, the Davidians had an ultimate plan. And it was, they were going to die and they were going to take as many people as they could with them. And they were not going to let the government dictate to them how they were going to live or die, and they were going to do it their way, period. So like with all major disasters is what I'm going to refer to this, there's going to be a federal inquiry as to what happened. They're going to investigate the actions of the law enforcement agencies. They're going to investigate the actions of the civilians that were involved. And that's no different from this case, even at the federal level. Once the investigator was actually able to get his documents from the FBI, he noted that there was a quote-unquote spirit of resistance in the FBI against his investigation. All right. However, the investigation concluded that the canister fired by the FBI did not start any of the fires. And since all of the available evidence demonstrated that the canisters led 75 feet from the main building hours before the fire started. So the canisters had already been deployed and before the fire was even started. So that refutes the allegation that the canister started the fire or that the tank started the fire. The evidence showed quite the contrary. Okay. So the investigation placed the sole blame for the fire on David Koresh. Now, during the investigation, the investigator reviewed 2 million pages of documents, conducted 849 interviews, and thousands of pounds of physical evidence was reviewed. And bottom line was this. The investigator showed that the only people responsible for starting that fire were the Branch Davidians. And it was probably done at the direction of David Koresh. But once again, the Davidians did not agree with the government, did not agree with their government's laws, did not agree with the government's rules, felt that the government had no business whatsoever telling them what kind of guns to have, what kind of explosives to have, how many, how much, so on and so forth. So they're not going to believe the story. They're not going to take what the FBI says. They're not going to conclude with the investigation. All right. That's just the way they are. They're an anti-government radical cult that wanted to do their own thing in their own style. But as a result of the investigation and the raid, there were a shit ton of wrongful death civil suits that were filed against the government. And eventually there were so many of them, they were just compiled into one proceeding. But it was dismissed. The case was dismissed in 2000. And it was determined that the federal agents had not used excessive force in their tear gas assault. And found that the Davidians themselves had started the fire. But of course, now that's being appealed. And it still hasn't been settled to my knowledge as of today. But that's the Waco siege in a nutshell right there. Like with anything dealing with the government and dealing with cults, the entire story is very complex, very deep, very out there, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term. David Koresh was insane. He was crazy. He had the ability to convince people to think the way he does. He had people convinced that he was the next Messiah, if not the Messiah, but basically heir to the biblical king. And that it was his job to break open and interpret the seven seals and to prepare for Armageddon. That is the Branch Davidians in a nutshell. He had a shit ton of armament. He was probably better armed than most small police departments. I spent several years in the National Guard, and based on what they found, he had more shit than my National Guard armory did. And we had some pretty fun shit. But the dude was wacko, hence the term Waco. But he got what he deserved in the end. But that wasn't the end of the situation. After Waco, we had Timothy McVeigh decide to go ahead and rent a Ryder truck, take a trip up to Oklahoma City, and blow up the federal building. Why? Because he did not agree with how the Waco incident was handled by the FBI. And what's so irritating about that is McVeigh was an Army veteran, and he was also anti-government. So I'm trying to put those two points together, and for the life of me, I can't figure that one out. Maybe his personal experiences of being in the military turned him into an anti-government, but his whole excuse was blowing up the Murray Building in Oklahoma City was because he didn't like the way Waco was handled. And then on top of that, we have another incident that happened a couple of years later up at Ruby Ridge. Similar situation, but not as many weapons involved. but definitely the allegation of agent misconduct. We'll have to talk about Ruby Ridge another time because that's a story in and of itself. My personal opinion on Ruby Ridge in a nutshell is the government fucked up in that they didn't have a real legit reason to go up there other than to be government bullies. And unfortunately, somebody died. And on the civilian side, yeah. So we'll have to get into Ruby Ridge at another time because, like I said, that's another story in and of itself. All righty. With all that being said, we are about out of time. Join me next week as we cover another topic of discussion where I give you my opinion, views, and just overall nonsense about what's going on in the world today. More specifically, that involving the criminal justice system and the Constitution. And as a reminder, please keep sending me your suggestions, comments, and ideas to wytdm@yahoo.com. Or you can follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also follow my webpage at www.podpage.com/WYTDM. So until next time, be good, be safe, and always remember, what you think doesn't matter.